Hello and welcome to another edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. Each week we bring you another original dramatization of a classic story, and tonight is no exception. Our tale for this evening is taken from a short story called Ring Once for Death by Robert Arthur. It was first published in 1954 in a magazine called Amazing Stories. The tale begins in Sam Key's little curio shop on Mott Street. Dr. Mark Williams and his wife, Edith, who are celebrating their 20th wedding anniversary, are stepping into a little store.
Mark, it hasn't changed. It doesn't look as if a thing had been sold since we were here on our honeymoon.
It certainly doesn't. 20 years, and it looks just the same as it did. Dusty jars of ginseng root and tiger's whiskers. The same little bronze Buddhas.
Yes, with the ancient samurai swords over the counter, just as they were. And there's the same old musky smell.
If someone hadn't told us Sam Key was dead, I'd believed we'd step back 20 years in time. Like they do in those science fiction stories young David reads.
We must buy something. As a 20th anniversary present for me?
What would you like?
Well, I really liked the sound of the bell as we came in. How about a bell?
Good evening. May I show you something?
Yes. I didn't see you standing there in the shadows. We think we want a bell, but we aren't quite sure. You're Sam Key's son.
Sam Key Jr. My honored father passed to the halls of his ancestors 5 years ago. I could just say that he died, but customers like the more flowery mode of speech. They think it's, quaint.
I think it's nice. Not quaint at all.
I'm sorry your father is dead.
We'd hoped to see him again. 20 years ago, when we were a very broke young couple on a honeymoon, he sold us a wonderful rose crystal necklace for half price.
I'm sure he still made a profit. But if you'd like a bell, here are small temple bells, camel bells, dinner bells.
Well, I don't know. What kind of bell do you want, dear?
This one. Right there. A bell carved out of crystal. And rose crystal at that. What could be more perfect? A rose crystal wedding present and a rose crystal anniversary present.
I don't think you want that one. It's broken.
Broken? What do you think, Mark?
It looks perfect to me.
I mean, it's not complete. It has no clapper. It will not ring.
Why, he's right. The clapper's missing.
Well, we can have another clapper made. That is, if the original can't be found.
The bell and the clapper were deliberately separated by my father 20 years ago. My father was afraid of this bell.
Afraid of it?
You seem like intelligent, educated people, so this will probably sound like a tourist story to you. But my father believed it. This bell was supposedly stolen from the temple of a sect of Buddhists, somewhere in the mountains of China's interior. Just as many Protestants believe that the Christian Judgment Day will be heralded by a blast on St. Peter's trumpet, so this small sect is said to believe that when a bell like this one is rung, a bell carved from a single piece of rose crystal and consecrated by ceremonies lasting 10 years, any dead person within sound of it will rise and live again.
Good heavens! And no pun intended. Mark, think what a help this bell will be in your practice when we make it ring again. I'm just teasing him. My husband is really a very fine surgeon.
Yes, that is a very fine joke indeed. But I must be truthful with you. You will not be able to make it ring. It is not possible. Only the original clapper, carved from the same block of rose crystal, will make it ring. That is why my father separated them.
Did he really take it seriously?
Ah, but there is more. I have told you only half the story. My father also told me, though the bell defeats death, death cannot ultimately be defeated. Robbed of its chosen victim, the bell takes another into death as a, replacement, you might say. When the bell was used in the ancient temple where it was carved, let us say a high priest or a chief had died, a slave or servant was placed nearby for death to take when it had been forced to relinquish its grasp on the important one.
Well, if your father believed it...
What a preposterous story. It is sheer lunacy. If you wish to buy it, the bell is $10, plus, of course, sales tax.
The story alone is worth more than that. I think we'd better have it delivered. Shouldn't we, Edith? It'll be safer in the mail than in our suitcase.
Delivered? Sent? Of course. And as for its not ringing, I will make it ring. I know I will.
While it may all be superstition, it is not wise to tempt the old gods.
Yes, Edith, it might be best.
Oh, don't be a ninny, Mark. You're a man of science. If we have it delivered, when will the bell arrive at our house?
It should be there by Saturday, at the latest.
Good. We'll be looking for it.
It was nice to meet you, Mr. Key. We were very fond of your father.
Thank you for your kindness, and I hope you enjoy the bell.
The package came on Saturday morning when Mark Williams was catching up on the latest medical publications in his untidy, book-lined study. He heard Edith unwrapping paper in the hall outside.
Mark, it's here! The rose crystal bell.
Yes, it is even more beautiful in the light.
Let's make it ring.
Just for the sake of curiosity, and not because I believe that delightful sales talk we were given, let's see if it'll ring when I flick it with my finger. It should. No, that's not much of a ring. How about a pencil? Nope, no ring.
If you've finished, Mark, let me show you how it's done.
Gladly. Here. Where are you going with it?
Just a minute. Give me a few seconds. There. Got it.
Good Lord! That sent shivers down my spine. How did you do that?
I just put the clapper back in place with some thread.
The clapper? Where did you get the... Oh my God, it's not...
Yes, the crystal necklace we bought 20 years ago.
Of course!
As soon as young Sam Key told us about his father separating the clapper and the bell, I remembered the central crystal pendant on my necklace. It's shaped like a bell clapper. We mentioned it once.
Yes, I remember.
I guessed right away we had the missing clapper, but I didn't say so. I wanted to get one up on you, Mark, and I did. But also because, you know, I had a strange feeling that Sam Key Jr. wouldn't let us have the bell if he knew we had the clapper.
Maybe not, but he certainly didn't believe that spooky story any more than we do.
No, but his father did. And if old Sam Key had told it to us, remember how wrinkled and wise he seemed? I think we would have probably believed the story.
You're probably right, but when you rang it a moment ago, nothing seemed to happen. Let's test it again. No? Nothing. Well, it was a pretty unbelievable story, whether Mr. Key believed it or not. But then again, it may not be working because there are no dead people within hearing distance, and no one to raise from the grave.
I'm not sure I feel like joking about the story. I had planned to use it as a dinner bell and to tell the story to our guests. But now, I'm not so sure. Sit still, I'll answer. Hello? Yes, he's here.
What is it, dear?
An emergency at the hospital. A young man. Automobile accident. Fracture of the skull, Dr. Amos says. He wouldn't have disturbed you, but you're the only brain surgeon in town, with Dr. Hendricks away on vacation.
Yes, I knew I'd be on call. Well, man's work is from sun to sun, but a doctor's work is never done. Guess I'd better get my things together.
I'll drive you. Let me grab my purse.
Okay, let's roll.
Four hours later, as they drove homeward, the traffic was light, which was fortunate. Mark seemed distracted, not paying attention to his driving. Several times he found himself on the center line and had to pull back into his own lane.
Oh, Mark, try not to take it so hard.
I've lost patience before, but this one feels different. Like there was something I should have done, but didn't.
You put too much of yourself into every operation.
Perhaps that's true, but still, that young man back there should have lived. Every indication was that he would live, yet, just as I thought we had everything under control, that he was in stable condition, he just died, for no good reason.
These things happen, darling. You know that. You've been there before. A doctor can only do so much. Some of the outcomes are just a product of nature, and she does play tricks at times. Nature always wins in the end.
Yes, confound it! I know all that, but I resent losing that young man. There was no valid reasons for it. Unless there was some complication I overlooked. I ordered an autopsy, but...
Well, then that should take care of it.
No, Edith, I have to know. I want to see it with my own eyes. I'm sorry, but I'm going back to do that autopsy myself. I'm going to turn back now and do it now. I have to know.
Oh, Mark, please don't...
Hold on, Edith!
Edith!
I never saw the car that hit us. I heard the frantic blare of a horn and a scream of brakes, and in that frozen instant realized that there was going to be a collision. The next time I opened my eyes, I was lying on the ground. There was the figure of a state trooper standing over me, and I remembered the crash. My head hurt, but there was no confusion in my mind. I understood that there had been a crash, help had come, and I must have been unconscious for several minutes at least. I tried to sit up.
Hey, lady, take it easy. You had a bad bump. You gotta lie still and take it easy until the ambulance gets here. It ought to be here in about 5 minutes.
Mark, my husband, is he all right?
Now, lady, please. He's being taken care of.
Please help me up. I need to see about my husband.
No, you just need to lie down there.
No, I'm going to see about my husband. Now, if you won't help me up, at least get out of my way.
Yes, ma'am, of course.
As I sat up, I saw a car on its side some yards away. Other cars pulled up around it, a little group of staring people who had stopped to gawk. Then I saw Mark, my wonderful Mark, lying on the ground a few feet away, a coat folded beneath his head. He was dead. I had been a doctor's wife for 20 years, and before that a nurse. I knew death when I saw it.
I'm really sorry, lady. He's dead. He was still breathing when I got here, but he died 2 or 3 minutes ago.
Oh, no, Mark, my poor Mark. It can't be. He was alive just a minute ago, and now he's...
Now, listen, officer, I'm telling you, it wasn't my fault. The guy pulled a sharp left right in front of me. Not a thing I could do. It's a wonder we weren't all three of us killed. You can see by the marks on my car, it wasn't my fault.
I never said it was your fault.
I closed my mind to their voices and concentrated solely on my husband. I checked for a pulse, and there was none. No, he was dead. My dear, loving husband was dead. I could not hold back the tears. I wanted to, but I couldn't. I put my hand in my bag to find something to stem the tears, and I felt it. Something cold and smooth and hard. It was the bell. It must have gotten shoved into my bag as we were hurrying to leave. Tinkled as I shoved it out of the way, looking for a tissue. Mark! Mark, darling! You're alive! You're alive! Oh, darling, darling, lie still.
Edith, my God, are you all right?
Oh, yes, dear, I'm fine. It's you.
Sorry, darling. Damned careless of me thinking of the hospital and that botched operation.
Oh, Mark, I'm so glad you're with me. The ambulance will be here any second.
Ambulance? I'm all right now. Help me sit up.
But, Mark, I...
Just a bump on the head. Come on, help me up.
Easy, buddy, easy. We thought you were dead. So you just sit right there. We don't want to lose you a second time.
Hey, I'm sure glad you're all right. Woo, fella, you had me nervous, even though it wasn't my fault.
No one ever said it was your fault.
I mean, how's a guy going to keep from hitting you when...
Catch him! Out of the way, quick! I checked him for a pulse. There was none. I performed standard CPR on him until the ambulance got there. Still nothing. He was dead. Stone cold dead. And he hadn't even quivered.
Mark?
Yes, I woke up a few minutes ago. I've been lying here in bed, thinking.
I'll get you another sleeping pill. Dr. Amos said for you to take them and sleep until tomorrow.
I know. I'll take one in a few minutes. You know, hearing that clock just now reminded me of something.
Yes?
Just before I came to this afternoon, after the crash, I had a strange impression of hearing a bell ring. It sounded so loud in my ears I opened my eyes to see where it was.
A bell?
Yes. Just an auditory hallucination, of course.
But, Mark...
Yes?
A bell did ring. I mean, I had the crystal bell in my bag, and it tinkled a little as I was looking for something to dry my tears. Do you suppose...
Of course not. That had nothing to do with it. This was a loud bell, like a great gong.
But, I mean, Mark, darling, a moment earlier, you had no pulse.
No pulse?
And you weren't breathing. Then the crystal bell tinkled, and you...
Nonsense! I know what you're thinking, and believe me, it's nonsense.
But Mark, the driver of the other car, you no sooner regained consciousness than...
He had a fractured skull. The ambulance intern diagnosed it. Skull fractures often fail to show themselves, and then, bingo, you keel over. That's what happened. Now let's say no more about it.
Of course. It's just as you say, Mark. The bell couldn't have had anything to do with it. Yes, you should sleep. Shall I go get that sleeping pill for you now?
Yes, I suppose. No, wait. Is David home?
No, I haven't heard him come in yet.
Has he phoned? He knows he's supposed to be in by midnight at the latest.
No, he hasn't phoned. But there was a school dance tonight, and he might be...
That's no excuse for not phoning. He's got the old car, hasn't he?
Yes, you gave him the keys this morning, remember?
All the more reason he should phone. 2 o'clock is too late for a 17-year-old boy to be out.
I'll speak to him. He won't do it again. Now please, Mark, let me get you that sleeping pill. I'll stay up until David...
Ah, there he is now, I bet. Hello?
And even though I couldn't hear the voice on the other end of the line, I felt him stiffen. And I knew. It was as if I could hear the words myself, and I knew with a mother's instinct for disaster.
Yes. Yes, I see. I understand. I'll come at once. Thank you for calling.
What's going on, Mark?
An emergency call. There's been an accident. I have to go.
It's David, isn't it? Don't try to hide it from me. It's about David. I know it is.
Yes. They said David is hurt. I have to go see about him. An accident.
He's dead. David's dead, isn't he, Mark? Please tell me.
Edith. Edith, my darling. Yes, he's dead. 40 minutes ago, the car went over a cliff going around a curve. They have him at the county morgue. They want me to identify him. Identify him. Oh, Edith, the car caught fire. He was badly burned, apparently.
I'm coming with you. You are not going without me. I'm coming with you.
The car sat in a pool of darkness between two lights in the parking lot. The long, low building, which was the county morgue, a blue lamp over its door, stood below the street level. A flight of concrete steps went down to it from the sidewalk. 10 minutes before, Dr. Mark Williams had gone down those steps. Now he climbed back up them, stiffly, wearily, like an old man. Edith was waiting in the car, sitting forward on the edge of the seat, hands clenched. As he reached the last step, she opened the door and stepped out.
Mark, was it?
Yes, it's David. I've completed the formalities. The coroner's making arrangements about the disposition of... Look, for now, the only thing we can do is go home.
I'm going to him.
No, Edith, there's no need. There's nothing you can do, and you mustn't see him.
He's my son. Our only son. Let me go.
No. What have you got under your coat?
It's the bell. The rose crystal bell. I'm going to ring it where David can hear.
Edith, you've got to get a hold of yourself. That won't bring...
It brought you back, Mark. You were dead, and now so is David. No, I'm going to bring him back.
Edith, you can't believe that's possible. You can't. Those were coincidences. Now let me have it.
No, I'm going to ring it. Now let me go. I want David back. I'm going to ring the bell.
Edith, stop it. You're making a fool out of yourself.
There. I've rung it. I know you don't believe, but I do. It'll bring David back. David! David, my boy, can you hear me?
Edith, you're just tormenting yourself. Come home. Please, come home.
Not until David comes back. David! David, can you hear me?
Stop it, Edith. Give me that. You're acting like a complete fool. If you'd only let me come alone.
Mark, listen.
What?
Listen.
Mom? Dad? Are you out here? Where are you?
David! It's David. Let me go, Mark. I must see him.
No, Edith, don't.
Dad? Mom? Where are you? Wait for me.
Let me go. David, we're here. We're over here, son.
Edith, if you ever loved me, listen to me. You mustn't see him. David, I had to identify him by his class ring and his wallet. He was burned. Terribly burned. It was a ghastly sight, and you should...
I'm going to see him.
But Edith, you mustn't. Wait, Edith, we're tangled up. Wait, stop, I'm slipping.
Oh, David, David.
Hey, Mom, I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry. But I didn't know what had happened until I got home and you weren't there. And then one of the fellows from school called me, and I realized there must have been a mistake, and you'd come here. And so I called a taxi and came as soon as I could. The taxi is parked at the entrance around the block, and I've been looking for you everywhere. Oh, poor Pete.
Pete?
Pete Friedberg. He was driving the old car. I lent him the keys and my driver's license. I shouldn't have done it, but he's older, and he kept begging me.
Then it's Pete who was killed. Pete who was burned.
Yes, Pete. I feel terrible about lending him the car, but he was supposed to be a good driver. And then them calling you and Dad, and making you think it was me. Oh, I'm so sorry, Mom.
Then Mark was right. Of course he was right. It's just a bell, a pretty little bell, that's all.
Bell? I don't follow you, Mom.
Never mind. It's just a bell. It doesn't have any power over life and death. It doesn't bring back, and it doesn't take away. Now where is your father? We'd better get back to him and let him know you're all right. And he may be thinking that the bell really worked.
Where is he, Mom?
He was right over there. Now where did he go?
I think I see him. Is that him, lying on the pavement?
It looks like he fell and hit his head. He's unconscious. What next? You see, we were arguing.
Mom, oh no, Mom. It looks worse than that. I think Dad is dead.
Dead? He can't be dead. He just slipped on the pavement.
He's not breathing, Mom. I think he's gone.
Oh, no, Mark. Please don't die. Please.
And what's all this broken glass scattered around?
Oh, my gosh. It's the bell. It's shattered.
Mom, look. There's one slender crystal that seems to have lodged right in Dad's heart.
Oh, no, Mark. My dear, dear Mark. Don't leave us, Mark.
Mom, who's that coming across the parking lot towards us?
I don't know. I don't care. Your father is dead, David. Don't you understand that?
He's in the shadows. My God, I think it's Pete. And he's still smoldering. Oh, it can't be. He burned to death. Pete, are you all right?
Oh my gosh, David, it was the bell. That is a thing from hell, raised from the dead. Run, David, run!
And so our story for this evening must come to an end, with Dr. Williams dead on the pavement, and Edith and David running for their lives, the still-smoldering Pete hot on their trail. Will they make it? Will Pete be healed of his burns and return to a normal life? Some things we have to leave up to the imagination of you, the listener. We hope you've enjoyed our spooky story based on a short tale by Robert Arthur called Ring Once for Death, a presentation of the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater. Our performers for this presentation were Terry Yates as Dr. Mark Williams, Kelly Moore was Edith, Ian Buchanan was Mr. Key, Byron Scarrett was the state trooper and Pete, and Brad Buchanan was the loud man and David. Post-production from Amy Humphrey and Joe Hayes of the band Clatter. The show was engineered and narrated by Darren Helwedge and adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan.
And now, to round out our evening of spooky tales, we bring you our rendition of a very short story by Arthur Conan Doyle called How It Happened.
I remember some things from that evening distinctly, and others are like some vague, broken dream. But from the time I returned from New York and got out at that little country station, everything is extraordinarily clear. I remember walking down the platform and looking at the illuminated clock at the end, which told me it was 11:30. I remember also my wondering whether I could get home before midnight. Then I remember the big automobile, with its glaring headlights and glitter of polished chrome, waiting for me. It was my new car, which had only been delivered that day. I remember asking Perkins, my chauffeur, how she had handled.
Excellently, sir.
I'll try driving her and see for myself.
The gears are not the same, sir. Perhaps I should drive.
No, I would like to drive and see how fast she will go.
As you wish, sir.
And so we started on the 5-mile drive for home. My old car had a different shifting mechanism, but the new one was not difficult to master, and soon I thought I understood it. It was foolish, no doubt, to begin learning a new car in the dark, but one often does foolish things with no dire consequences. I got along very well until I came to Clay Stall Hill. It is one of the worst hills in the countryside, 1.5 miles long, very steep, with 3 sharp curves. The gates of my estate were at the foot of the hill. We were just over the brow of the hill, where the grade is steepest, when the trouble began. I was at top speed when the gear shaft stuck in neutral. I could not downshift. I slammed on the brakes and felt them give. The brake pedal went all the way to the floor. I broke into a cold sweat. By this time, we were flying down the slope and increasing speed. I brought her round the first curve all right. Then we did the second one, though it was a close shave, and we almost went into the ditch. There was a mile straightaway then, and the third curve at the bottom of the hill, and after that, the gate of my house. Perkins behaved splendidly. He was perfectly cool and alert. I thought, since I had made the first two curves, I could do the third as well. Perkins read my intention.
I wouldn't do it, sir. At this speed, the car will flip over.
You may be right.
I'll hold her steady if you care to jump and chance it. We can never get around that curve. Better jump, sir.
No, I'll stick it out. You can jump if you like.
I'll stick it out with you, sir.
The wheels were whirring like a high wind, and the big body was creaking and groaning with the strain. I remember thinking what an awful sight we would present to anyone who met us. It was a narrow road, and we were a great roaring golden death to anyone who came in our path. We got round the corner on two wheels, and I thought we would surely flip over, but after staggering for a moment, the car righted itself and darted onwards. That was the third corner and the last one. There was only the gate to my house now. Perhaps I could have done it, but the steering wheel had jammed on one of the corners. The wheel did not turn easily. I saw the open gate on the left. I turned the wheel with all my strength, and the next instant, going 70 miles an hour, the right front wheel struck the right-hand pillar of my gate. I heard the crash. I was conscious of flying through the air, and then... When I regained consciousness, I was lying in some brushwood on the side of the drive. A man was standing beside me. I imagined at first it was Perkins, but when I looked again, I saw it was Stanley, a man I had known at college some years before, and for whom I had genuine affection. There was something peculiarly sympathetic about Stanley's personality. At the present moment, I was surprised to see him, but I was like a man in a dream, giddy and shaken.
Hello, John. It is good to see you again.
What a crash. What an awful crash.
Yes, it was.
I was unable to move. Indeed, I did not want to move, but my senses were alert. I saw the wreck of the car lit up by moving lanterns. There was a little group of people talking in hushed voices. They took no notice of me, but were very busy round the car. Then suddenly, I heard a cry of pain.
My leg! It's stuck under the car! Where's the master?
Here I am, I answered, but they did not seem to hear. Stanley laid his hand upon my shoulder, and his touch was inexpressibly soothing. I felt light and happy in spite of it all.
No pain, of course?
None.
There never is.
Then it hit me. Stanley? Is that really you, Stanley?
Yes, it is me, John.
But that can't be. You died in the war. I attended your funeral. You are dead.
So are you.
And so our evening of spooky tales, designed to give you a little shiver, comes to a fearful ending. We hope you've enjoyed this audio presentation of Arthur Conan Doyle's short story, How It Happened. With Joe Bogue as John, Michael Tooley as Perkins, and Ian Buchanan as Stanley.
We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Ring Once for Death from the Maplewood Barn Radio Theaters, and that you'll tune in again next week and every Friday evening at 6:30 for another classic story from the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, right here on KBIA.